Wynn and I want to express our gratitude for every one of our listeners. Thank you for being a part of this podcast and sharing this space with us each week. We are now offering an opportunity to work with Wynn or myself individually in a deeper look towards what's true about life and who you really are. If you'd like to know more, email me or Wynn for more details. In a 3-day dive under the noise, anything is possible. Let's find out. Now onto the podcast.
Welcome. This podcast is an exploration into being human and what's possible when there's less attention on the noise in our heads. Warning. While listening to this broadcast, you may experience moments of deep peace, sighs of relief, personal insights, or long stretches of dead air. Do not be afraid. This is normal. Under the Noise with Wynn Morgan and Kate Roberts. Welcome to this week's Under the Noise with me, Wynn Morgan, and my fabulous co-host, Kate Roberts. Hello, Kate. How are you doing?
Hey, Wynn. How's it going?
Good, thanks. Good. So the thought today was that we could talk about moods. And the reason is because that's something I'm very familiar with. And and it's not something I would say is a badge of honor, but I happen to have had over my entire life been affected by my moods. So I thought we could chat about it. Not necessarily about me and my moods. That's beyond hope, let's face it. But how moods work in human beings, their effects and cause and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I thought that might be something we could talk about today.
Absolutely. Wynn, what do you think is the cause of moods?
That's, you know what? I don't really know. What I do know is what looks like the cure is a falsehood. So here's what I mean. When I'm in a low mood, well, people might say bad mood, some people might say low state of consciousness, some people might say grumpy or anything else, but you know, and for you listening, for whatever phrase springs to mind when you're in a low mood. What I do know for me when I'm in one of those places, everything looks really real. Everything I think looks permanent. Everything there looks like the world is out to get me. And I'd go as far as to saying, I know I've thought this in the past, and I still have thought it now and again in a low mood, like I'm cursed. Someone's put a hex on me, and that's why. I mean, I would be that easily persuaded that there is what's going on for me, and I would take anything personally. So the world's out to get me. It looks really permanent. I take things personally. And therefore, in that place, I look to solve the things that look to be the blame. Me. And or the thing from the outside that looks to be the blame. In other words, let's say, so today, it's really cold. So I'm terrible with a cold, therefore I need to emigrate and move to a warmer climate. By the way, if you're watching on YouTube and you've just noticed Kate laughing, that goes back to a conversation that Kate and I were having, well, about Kate, in fact, a few minutes before we started recording today. But I could then make life changes about, well, the reason is lifestyle changes, even geographical decisions about me, because I think the cold and winter is the cause of my mental state. And my issue in life is to do with climate, geography, or going back to the other notion I mentioned earlier on, I could make it about me, and because I'm doomed, therefore me, and I'm not worthy and all this kind of stuff, and I will get really down on myself. Or I will think, well, it's my partner's fault. She said this, she did that, therefore I need to end this. You know, the best way out of this, because, you know, obviously she's to blame, therefore I will exit the relationship, or I will escalate it, where something that my partner might say to me, I will take that as far more seriously and personally than I would do if I was in a better mood or a different mood. And the same thing with the weather. I would, if I was in a good mood, which I am today, then the fact it's really cold outside, bitterly cold, doesn't affect me at all. I just put the heating on and get on with my day, as opposed to complain about it. If it looked like, if I was in a low mood, that weather was causing my low mood. So anyway, it's my starter for 10 today, Kate, about what I see, not necessarily as the cause of mood, but the perceived cause of mood. But incorrect, because to my mind, they're just a symptom of. A symptom of mood is the fact that it looks like I'm to blame, or they're to blame, or an external circumstance is to blame. It's not. It's just how things look when I'm feeling low.
Sometimes if I'm in a low mood, it feels very natural to own it. I don't know of a better way of saying that. Like, I'm sad. I'm mad. It's not like this, like, oh, it's just a mood that's kind of moving through, or energy that's kind of moving through, which a lot of people, you can hear a lot of people talk about it in that way, right? It's, I'm this. It's like, as soon as you start to feel this, it's like it becomes like part of you for a while. And I think it kind of probably drags it out for me a little bit more, because I'm sad, or I'm this. Now, I'm not even in a day probably the same mood, good or bad, all day long. It's this movement of mood, right? But as soon as I'm having a sad day, I've just taken my whole day and decided that's what it is. I don't know why I do that, but I remember I was listening to a call with one of our previous guests, Marina Galan, and she was telling this example of Native Americans. I don't think she specifically said which ones, but that they would say things like, sadness is visiting me today. Like, it's this thing that just, it's this temporary thing that just kind of comes through and moves through and visits and leaves. It's not, I'm sad.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that example of like allowing it to visit, knowing it's temporary. I don't think they say, oh, sadness lives with me now. It's this acknowledgement that it's temporary, that it's just, it's not who we are. It's just going to come and visit for a bit and leave. I love that, because I tend to own it for a while, like make it me for a while.
A lot of languages have it differently, as opposed to I am sad.
I have sadness.
I have, you know, this. I remember when I was learning Italian, it's not I am hungry. I have hunger.
Mm.
It's like I have indigestion, you know. I don't think people tend to blame their partner, their spouse, or a colleague or a family member for indigestion. You know, I have indigestion in the same way as I have sadness. It doesn't, you know, there isn't the stickiness that we go to blame someone else for. But I also know, and I don't know, you know, about the Native American people that Marina was talking about, but it seems to me even linguistically, because I mean, I've talked to people in Italy and other languages where I have this emotion as opposed to I am this emotion. And still, to your point, I'm having a sad day. Goes back to something that I mentioned, right? It looks permanent. This feeling looks permanent in a low mood. It just looks like it's a big freaking deal. Doesn't make it so. That's just how it looks. And I love the notion of, or the fact of seeing how the effect of a low mood, it just makes something look, you know, it's just not a visitor. Oh, it's in for the day. Yeah, this is just, you know, me. I am cursed. I'm having a sad day. Whatever else it might be. Anyway, I interrupted you. How dare me?
I don't know where I was going with that. I just think it's interesting how it, when I'm in a low mood, well, now that I'm saying that, I'm questioning what I'm saying. Yeah, I seem to own low moods more than I own the. Yeah, I know. I was gonna say maybe I own the good moods as well, like the high moods when I'm in them, but I don't know if I do that as much as the low ones. The low ones are like, this is me, right? But not the elevated mood. Interesting.
It is an interesting phenomenon, and that's not just you and me, about the moods that we own and the ones that we don't. I think there's a direct kind of link there. I've yet to know anybody, but you could write in if you're one of these people and prove me wrong, where, oh, low moods, bring them on. Nothing personal about that. Jeez, no, I own my high moods, not my low moods. I mean, I'd see it's possible to own them, to own the high and not the low. But from experience and talking with a lot of people over a lot of years, it seems to me the low mood, that's the one we take seriously and personally and see as a bit more meaningful and a problem to solve than other moods we don't see as a problem to solve.
It would be kind of funny to hear somebody say something like that. Something's wrong, okay? I'm in a good mood. I need to fix it. But you never hear that. You
I
never
do
hear
hear.
somebody want to fix their good mood.
No, but what I do hear from people, though, is I'm in a good mood. I don't know why. And I'm afraid that I'm going to feel low again soon.
Oh.
I hear that. And I would probably have
That it
said
won't
that.
last, basically, this fear that it won't last.
I am so scared of this high right now that I know what happens next. I crash. Look, I
Yeah.
know that one really well because I lived with that oscillation of high low when I was, you know, diagnosed with what was called a mood disorder. I would be so afraid of the highs because I knew what would happen next, especially when someone told me, oh yeah, you got a mood disorder, this is what happens, this cyclical motion. I'm going, all right, yeah. So I wouldn't even enjoy the highs because I'd be too afraid. You guess what happens. Far is the moving from a high to a low is guaranteed to be quick if I'm afraid of it, because now I'm afraid and that will, you know, bring me down.
It would be like if moods didn't feel so solid in our experience. Like, what do you think that would be like?
Well, it would be like someone who no longer needs to worry about his moods.
Or fix things, right?
Yeah.
But like,
well, I'm
what
talking from personal
everybody
experience
knew.
there. Right.
Like, what if moods
Yeah.
just weren't a solid? Okay, so I remember being in a group one time, and I've also heard about this in other kind of coaching circles, is that something that they do with some of the groups that they get together, whether it's corporate clients or things like that, where they're trying to, I don't know, solve issues within the company. And they were taught by the coaches that at the start of every meeting, they'd weigh in on their, I don't know, their mood, their bandwidth, basically what they're capable of doing at that moment. At the very start of the meeting, they would go around and give it a number. And they learned how to do this, how to kind of touch base with their mood, their clarity of thought, and give it a number. And they would go around and just, that's where I'm at. So the people with the low numbers, they didn't weigh in as so much on the meeting because they knew that they couldn't trust their thoughts in that moment because they were in really low numbers, and that was okay. And there was this acceptance within the group of where everybody's at. And so the higher numbers would weigh in a lot more in the meetings, and everybody knew that the lower numbers, and then they would, at the end, they'd wrap up the same. So some of the high numbers would kind of drop down based on, I don't know, whatever was discussed. Maybe some people would stay where they were. Some of the low numbers came up because they got out of their head for a bit. I just thought that was so interesting, and it was very casual. It was very accepted, whatever number they were at. Nobody tried to fix it. They just knew. It was just an awareness of where I'm at. And I thought that's so cool. Like, what if we all just kind of, sorry, I'm a two right now. Don't listen to me. It'll pass. Like, what if it was like that light and fluid?
Well, that's what's available if we see that it is light and fluid. And that, to me, would be an indicator of a very high performing team. The potential for whatever that, however well that meeting goes for either problem solving or idea generation is far higher when everyone is aware of where they're at, their state of mind, their mood. And especially when they know that that's fluid. And only comes from in here, in their own head, as opposed to outside. Because you're right, and every time that I've taken groups through that in corporate trainings, that works when they know it's fluid, and they know it's internal, as opposed to coming from outside. And that's just,
Seems like that would be a game changer.
it is a game changer.
Yeah.
Years later, it's still a game changer.
I think that would be a game changer for me as well. Like knowing I'm just in a low number right now. Nothing to do, nothing to fix, no decisions to make. Just be here until I'm not here anymore. Like with a lightness.
Well, realizing that has changed my life. I have a different relationship with my moods. And what reminds me now is I think I've mentioned it on a previous episode. Me and my friend John, we would collaborate on certain things, and sometimes in other parts of the world where we'd both be kind of like quite jet lagged, and there'd be lots of people pulling at us for time and so forth, and we'd be a bit tired. And I remember the times that he and I would be having our kind of morning coffee, and we'd both be grumpy, and we'd find it really funny. We'd find ourselves and each other really grumpy. So the notion of being able to have a different relationship with morning grumpiness, I think that's something that the 35-year-old version of me would have had no idea that that's possible. No idea. Because the 35-year-old version of me, I had no ideas how moods work, nor emotions, nor thought, nor himself. He had no idea. So I think it says a lot of the potential for and the possibility for someone to actually find their moods not only as light but humorous. That's a gift. To your point, what you said earlier on, I wish everyone would know this. Absolutely. I mean, that's a lovely wish. Possibility for everyone to take their mood so lightly that they could laugh at it. Which is the ultimate in my mind of taking it lightly.
Do you have clients that come to you and would like to get rid of their moods?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that just... Would you consider anxiety a mood?
Initially, I'd say no. I'm not, and as soon as I then said no, I want to think about it more, I get in my head about it. So, you know, to me, anxiety is a very pervasive feeling that of impending doom. And that's just what I think right now about what anxiety is. And therefore, the high kind of like the sense of fight or flight, an adrenaline rush and cortisol and all those other hormones coursing through the body that are horrible. And it's that heightened. I think they work in similar ways that what's behind them is a part of the human experience. I think it's possible for anxiety to be seem like a bigger deal or to struggle longer with it. I think that's possible for it to feel bigger and longer and more real if anyone's in a low mood already. I think it's possible for a moment of anxiety to last longer. In a higher mood, an anxious thought would just come and go. Anxious thought in a lower mood might last. That's just what I think. What do you think?
I don't know. You know, I think everybody's experience is different, but what it looks to me is that moods, even the ones that I think are kind of assisted with like hormonal changes, right? I think they are fluid in that they're energy that moves through, right? It's consistent. And I don't know where it comes from or why, or maybe it's just our bodies. Yeah. But it seems to me like when things have gone beyond that and we believe the thinking that shows up from those places, those feelings, right? And it all looks really real. But I think that we create these kind of habits of thought that kind of gather momentum and develop, like it becomes so much part of our experience, believing kind of these thoughts and it looks really real and it affects our how we feel in our bodies and between like stress and high blood pressure and all these other things and then into anxiety and panic attacks and other kind of, it is a lot of habitual thinking that we really believe is true. That's what it feels like to me. Whereas moods are like this kind of fluid thing. But when we're believing our stressful thinking and we continue to do it and it builds and starts to create problems, you know, and like issues in our physical bodies and things like that. A lot of thinking that just feels very real. You know, and that's the gift. Like in what you were saying before, is that it's not that moods go away. And it's not that this habitual thinking goes away. So when you start to see it, it's like we trust it less.
Yeah.
Like the relationship is very different and we trust it less.
Yeah. And see it for what it is, not how it looks.
Or even how it feels.
See that too. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And that's why no matter how long somebody's been feeling a certain way or how it's kind of developed in their psychology, like even for you, like mood disorder diagnosis and things like that, like there's an infinite world of possibility for everyone.
Yeah,
I think
I've seen it for myself and many, many other people in the last sort of 10 odd years where that, I can't doubt that possibility. Thank you, Kate.
And thanks for your topic.
You say it as if it's a surprise that I have, which, by the way, it's true. It is a surprise.
That was a good topic.
Yeah, it's a surprise that I had an idea before we even said hello today about what we might talk about.
And thank you. You've been listening to Under the Noise. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics or just want to chat, reach out to us. Our details follow the podcast. And we hope you have a great week.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. If you have a topic or question that you'd like us to chat about, email Wynn or Kate at wynn@wynning.co.uk and kate@katerobertscoaching.com. Until then, enjoy what's possible under the noise.